You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is an ABC News special report.
Now, by the entire ABC network, Good Morning America was in progress in the East Coast and the Midwest, but we're joined by the entire network just to show you some pictures at the foot of New York City. This is at the World Trade Center. Obviously, a major fire there, and there has been some sort of explosion. We don't fully know the details. There is one report, as of yet unconfirmed, that a plane has hit the World Trade Center, and you can see that there is smoke there coming out of at least two sides of the building.
Yeah. This just in, you are looking at obviously a very disturbing live shot there. That is the World Trade Center, and we have unconfirmed reports this morning that a plane has crashed into one of the towers of the World Trade Center. CNN Center right now is just beginning to work on this story, obviously calling our sources and trying to figure out exactly what happened, but clearly something relatively devastating happening this morning there on the south end of the island of Manhattan. That is, once again, a picture of one of the towers of the World Trade Center.
Well, you can see these pictures. It's obviously something devastating has happened. And again, unconfirmed report that a plane has crashed into one of the towers there. We are efforting more information on this subject as it becomes available to you.
Right now, we've got Sean Murtaugh. He is a CNN producer on the telephone right now. Sean, what can you tell us about what you know?
This is Sean Murtaugh. I just was standing on the Vice President of Finance.
Sean,
Vice President of Finance for CNN.
Sean, we're on the air right now. What can you tell us about this situation?
Hello?
Yes, Sean, you're on the air now. Go ahead. What can you tell us?
I just witnessed a plane that appeared to be cruising slightly lower than normal altitude over New York City, and it appears to have crashed into, I don't know which tower it is, but it hit directly in the middle of one of the World Trade Center towers.
Sean, what kind of plane? Was it a small plane, a jet?
It was a jet. Looked like a two-engine jet, maybe a 737.
You're talking about a large passenger commercial jet.
United 93, that traffic view is 112 miles eastbound 370.
Negative contact, we're looking at United 93.
Somebody call, please. United 93, verify 350. United 93, verify your part of 350. United 93, verify your level 350.
It's 8:52 here in New York. I'm Bryant Gumbel. We understand that there has been a plane crash on the southern tip of Manhattan. You're looking at the World Trade Center. We understand that a plane has crashed into the World Trade Center. We don't know anything more than that. We don't know if it was a commercial aircraft. We don't know if it was a private aircraft. We have no idea how many were on board or what the extent of the injuries are right now. We have an eyewitness on the phone right now. Sir, what's your name?
Yeah, my name is Stuart.
Stuart, where are you right now?
I'm working at a restaurant in Soho.
All right, so tell us what you saw, if you would.
I was waiting at a table and I literally saw it seemed to be like a small plane. I just heard a couple noises. It looked like it bounced off the building, and then I just saw a huge ball of fire on top. And then the smoke seemed to simmer down, and it just, a lot of smoke was coming out, and that's pretty much the extent of what I saw.
A private aircraft?
I'm not sure if it was a... It just seemed like a smaller plane. I don't think it was anything commercial.
Could you tell us whether or not there was a prop or a jet?
I honestly don't know. It happened too quickly.
United 93, that traffic view is 112 miles eastbound 370.
It does not appear that there's any kind of an effort up there yet. Now remember, oh my God.
That looks like a second plane.
I did not see a plane go in. That That just exploded.
You just saw another plane coming in from the side.
You did. That was out of my view.
Yes, and that's the second explosion. You could see the plane come in just from the right-hand side of the screen. So this looks like it is some sort of a concerted effort to attack the World Trade Center that is underway in downtown New York.
We will see that scene again just to make sure we saw what we thought.
We're going to give you a replay of what we just saw, and I must admit I thought it was some sort of fire equipment coming in or some sort of observation plane, but it was obviously designed to attack the World Trade Center. We're going to show you that. Here's a replay of the videotape.
Transport Minister David Colinette saying that they are monitoring the situation here in Canada, that we are taking security very seriously here as well, to quote the minister, that we are also here in Canada on alert for any possible attacks as well. Although it should be mentioned right now, what has happened, two attacks, there have been in Manhattan, one plane colliding with one twin tower, 18 minutes later, oh my God. Imagine the situation could get any worse. You've just seen it get worse. That was the second tower of the World Trade Center collapsing before our eyes. The second tower collapsing as rescue officials were trying to evacuate the building, trying to put the fire out that after a plane had collided there shortly before 9 o'clock this morning. Both towers at the World Trade Center, 110-story buildings, have collapsed.
There have been attacks in two American cities, New York and in Washington. The trade centers here in New York have been hit by airplanes. In Washington, there is a large fire at the Pentagon. The Pentagon has been evacuated. And there, as you can see, perhaps the second tower, the front tower, the top portion of which is collapsing. Good Lord. There have been attacks in two American cities, New York.
I'm going to interrupt you, Senator McCain. These are the first pictures we have in. This is from Somerset County, Pennsylvania. This is where the United Airlines flight, I believe it is 176, went down. I'm sorry, I'm correcting. United Airlines 93. This was a Boeing 757 bound from Newark, New Jersey to San Francisco. It crashed in Somerset County, Pennsylvania, near the town of Shanksville, south of Pittsburgh. We're told about 80 miles outside of Pittsburgh in western Pennsylvania. It is not known how many passengers or crew were on board, although initial reports indicated no survivors. Again, these are the first pictures we have coming in from WTAJ there in the Pittsburgh area. United Airlines telling us earlier they had lost this flight, and they knew that it had crashed near Pittsburgh. There is a second United Airlines flight, the Boeing 767 flight 175, bound from Boston to Los Angeles, has crashed. The airline still telling us at this point that they do not know where. We don't have information on the number of people aboard. It is possible, but not confirmed, that this would have been the second plane to hit the World Trade Center.
Show
877-876 Phil, world famous Phil Hendry Show. This is the anniversary today. This is it. We're 18 minutes into the end of the day, and I know that people have varying opinions, but it's always going to be an important day for me. I'm just speaking for me. So if you listen to my show and you, it's September the 11th, I guess Phil's going to do his his thing. Yeah, it's pretty much what's going to happen. We're going to play all those tapes, and we're going to, you know, bring back that visceral memory, which is necessary, I think. At least I believe it is. And a guy mentioned last hour, he mentioned Pearl Harbor, and I wasn't there. I wasn't even born yet, as I expect most of us weren't. But it had a great effect on the American people. It was very profound, and people remembered that for a long time. And even today, though most of us weren't there and don't have any direct personal experience of it, we do respect the day, and we do think of it, and we realize it was a important day. I mean, my only feeling is that it's disappointing for me, because I grew up, my high school years were spent in the 1960s, so I heard the clarion call for change. You know, I heard people talking about American foreign policy this, and about the credibility gap that, and about how we are being lied to over here, and then we had Richard Nixon. I always, to this day, I always say, Nixon, you know, you might have done a lot of things right, man, but the stuff you did wrong, boy, did that... Because nobody trusted government after Nixon. That was the end of the road, man, for any... And maybe that was healthy, I don't know. But the result of that was a couple of things. Nixon... Are you going to quit with your finger in your nose?
Sorry.
I'm talking serious here.
I told him, man. Sorry, I was listening, I was interested, I didn't know my finger.
Yeah, you didn't know your finger was in your nose, it was.
Yeah, but what... That...
It bothers me to turn and look at you with your finger in your nose. Where was I, Robert?
You were talking about Nixon.
Anyway, yeah, so Nixon's administration was the death of any residual trust the American people had in government. Now, that sounds funny today, but there was a time when people heard Uncle Sam say something, they heard the government say something, and they went, okay, that's the way it's... That's the way it's rolling out to us. We believe that. I don't know that there were too many reasons for the federal government to lie to the American people before, let's say, oh, I don't know, the 50s. I mean, I'm sure that there were all kinds of interesting things going on behind the scenes, but to what end? I mean, you can take a look at how we got a hold of Hawaii. That's pretty... messed up, and the Spanish-American War, that's all jacked up, and, you know, the Philippines, and on we go, but it really got interesting with the Bay of Pigs, and then Kennedy, and then came Nixon, so nobody trusted the government. So along comes the turn of the 21st century, and what have we got? We have an attack on the United States by a terrorist organization. I call it a terrorist organization, but it's actually a gang of psychopaths, a gang of Sunni psychopaths. Seriously, a gang of Sunni Muslim psychopaths. Now, they may not be the actual Muslims. They might be an embarrassing and criminal offshoot. I understand that. I get that. But that's nonetheless, I mean, they identify themselves as such. There are white supremacist organizations in America who call themselves Christian Identity. You ever heard this term?
Uh-uh.
Christian Identity. And so they are described as such by others. Christian Identity, that's a church. I don't know what it means, but I think it has something to do with America's the promised land, not Israel.
Well, that means there ain't no Jews.
Right. That's convenient for them, so they can say, America's the promised land, and guess what? There's no Jews here. So anyway, along comes 2001. Bang, down goes the World Trade Center, and out come all of the aspiring Robert Woodward and Carl Bernsteins that we have. Well, it had to have been the government, and it had to have been this. And even though there weren't a lot of them, they were very distracting, and they were very disrespectful, and they were very ignorant. And the most important aspect to the 9/11 truthers, they were very self-serving, money-grubbing. Money-grubbing, that's what they are. I mean, guys like Jones. Jones has got his disciples, but that guy, he's about one thing, making as much money off of the dummies as he can. So, you know, P.T. Barnum, meet Alex Jones. All right. Nonetheless, it causes a great deal of, cynicism. And then the thing on top of that is that we begin to question, what did we do wrong? Now, I say, and I will always say this, that's like a woman questioning her outfit the night she got raped. Had I not worn this? And I think that if she is legally entitled to wear that outfit, then she's legally entitled. And to ask questions like that is I think it's criminal in and of itself. It's like the Jews asking, where did we go wrong that we got slid into ovens? There must have been something. No. There comes a point where the act is so outrageous that all the questions about why it happened don't matter. Because what you've just done is you've just removed the moral high ground. So whatever the reasons in the heads of the guys that pulled off 9/11 were, they don't amount to nothing. And they never will, as far as I'm concerned. Never will. All the innocent people, the United States of America has been involved in a lot of wars, but the United States of America has never purposefully targeted innocent people in that manner. Now, you can say that in the bombing campaigns of World War II, all kinds of civilians were targeted by the British, by the Americans, by the French, by the Russians, and yes, by the Germans. But that was warfare in the 1940s. That's how it was done. That's how war was conducted. Along comes the 1960s, 70s, 80s, the 90s, and here we are today, and especially during the Gulf War, where we had smart bombs, and those are developed so that you have more of the target destroyed and less of the collateral destroyed, right? So with the United States making efforts in that direction along with other countries. So the U.S. has never, as a policy, as some countries have, and as Al-Qaeda has, and some Arab countries have, targeted on purpose the butchery of innocent people. So it doesn't make any difference to me what Al-Qaeda says or anybody else in that part of the world when they talk about the numbers of innocent people that America killed. The United States, in the process of trying to clean up a sick world, and I'll tell you something else, trying to right the empires of France, of Britain, and a few others, because that's who got caught in the lurch. When France went south after World War II, guess who was stuck in Indochina? We were. You know whose colony that was? The frogs. When the British were on their ass after World War II, they had no empire left. Well, guess who's stuck in the Middle East, which used to be British? You got it. We were. Now, you can say, well, we didn't have to be, but hey, they were allies of ours, friends of ours. You know, and after all, the pitch was to the Arab people after World War I, you help us win this war, we're going to help you get your own states and your own countries, and it's going to be a beautiful thing. America wasn't lying to them. Britain was. What happened to us was we got all of the garbage that had been created by the French and the British and the Germans and the Russians. We got all of that dumped onto our lawn. Because those guys, they don't exist anymore as world powers. So America had to take care of everything. We had to clean up every dirty, filthy little garbage pail that there was. And we also took all the grief for it. Even as people continued to emigrate, people continued to immigrate here. Even as people continued to celebrate this country as a place where you could work and actually get something done and actually create and thrive and live, even as they did all of those things, they created a whole new boogeyman, America. Why do we support Israel? I'll give you the short answer. The reason why we support Israel is because we had GIs come home from World War II who saw the bodies laying in feces and urine. We had American soldiers who walked into those concentration camps and saw that. So, if that's bad, to me, this day, 9/11, will always be a special day because it reminds me that America is a country, not an amusement park. America had its citizens murdered on this day by people who felt they had every right in the world to do it and would get the support of the world because of their self-pitying, manipulative, psychopathic propaganda. And they almost pulled it off. And America can't suddenly let down because it feels guilty. It exists. And we've got a strain of thinking these days that says, wow, you know, we actually exist. I mean, we're alive. We shouldn't really, not really. We got to turn this thing all over to somebody else, man. The best thing we can do, let's build a bunch of mosques. I mean, we got to apologize for something, don't we? World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Phil Hendry.
This is pretty interesting. You see this?
Yes, jump out a window.
Welcome to our show, the Phil Hendry Show. Here we're our final hour in our news hour here. I have Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard with me. A Playboy centerfold tried to open a plane door during a flight.
Yeah, he said because you said her boobs are too big.
Well, that's what it seemed like.
Her boobs were too big?
That's the way they made it seem like. They go try to bust out and everything.
Where's it sound? Oh, here it is. A Playboy centerfold tried to bust out midair. That's just a play on words, you know.
Yeah, man. You think her boobs are so big, she got to get out.
That's the way it sounded. It's feasible.
Oh, yeah, it's feasible. Meaning what, man? Her boobs are so big that the plane doesn't contain them?
Well, if they go up too high, and you were telling me about it, the air pressure makes everything expand, right?
You think her breasts got expanded by the air pressure and it was going to bust the plane open?
Yeah, but now I know, no, I know it isn't now, but I did know it that I did then.
What?
What are you talking about, man?
I know that now, but I didn't not know it then.
You knew it now, but in other words, you recognize what a completely jackball idea that is.
I dig a jackball, but it didn't happen.
So in other words, but if I said to you that, you know, a Playboy bunny on a plane...
Oh, why don't you let it... Just give it a rest.
Don't tell me to give it a rest. You're the cat that... Well, you know what? Robert brought it up. You're right, so I will give it a rest.
No, but he was just saying it 5 seconds ago. Just because he come on the air, now he says give it a rest.
What you're telling me is, in other words, a Playboy bunny goes up in an airplane. The air pressure affects the size of her breasts. They get so big, the plane explodes.
That's what I thought.
Well, it didn't happen.
No kidding.
All right. A Playboy... Oh, here. It says, the plane exploded because her boobs got too big.
Are you kidding?
Yes, I am.
Ha, man. Oh, you should have seen his face.
Shut up. No, I didn't.
All right. Just be quiet. A Playboy centerfold tried to bust out midair from a jet amid a bad case of high anxiety. Law enforcement officers met a JetBlue plane at its arrival gate in Newark Liberty International Airport Thursday afternoon because of a passenger who was causing a disturbance on board. The passenger was identified as 21-year-old Tiffany Livingston. She was aboard JetBlue flight 522 from Florida to Newark on Thursday when she when she bolted from her seat and tried to open the door of the plane. She became agitated because of turbulence and appeared to grab the handle of an emergency door, a source told Fox 5, Channel 5, Fox whatever.
Right there.
Yeah, that's in Newark, New Jersey. Fox 5 News. Then two off-duty police officers who happened to be on the flight stopped her. So much for air marshals, huh?
Well, they got an air marshal on every plane?
Not all of them.
Probably not all of them, no. In fact, I know not all of them. I don't know what air marshal, I don't know why, how, when, or where they put air marshals. These were two off-duty cops, and they happened to be on the flight. They stopped her. The plane, flight 522 or 552 from Fort Myers, Florida, landed safely and without incident, according to Allison Croyle, a spokesperson for the airline. JetBlue will cooperate fully with local authorities who are investigating this matter, she said in a statement. She said she's gone through this before, but never this bad, and didn't have her medication, according to one source talking to the New York Post. Who is this, Livingston? I guess. Livingston was detained, but she was later released, and no charges were filed. She was the centerfold for the debut edition of VIP, the Singapore version of Playboy, in which she was described as not just another pretty face.
She's white, though.
How do you know she's white?
Well, it's Tiffany.
And what difference does it make?
On account of Singapore.
Well, I don't know, man. I mean, if it's the Singapore version, maybe they like... They're women, you know? It's Playboy. Women, women, women. It doesn't make any difference. We got all kinds of women in Playboy here.
Yeah, it's because we got all kinds of women. Singapore only got one kind.
All right, so Singapore only got one kind, but I guess maybe the guys over there like to look at all kinds. I don't know. I mean, you got to turn everything into a racial thing? What are you going to do, man? Pass a law?
Yeah, but how come you're going to have Playboy in Singapore and you got a white woman in there? What about all the Singaporeans?
Yeah.
What's a Singaporean? Boy, that's a good one.
Well, what do you call them?
What do you call them, man? Ain't that a country?
Singapore's a country, yeah. It's a country and a city. It's like everything into one.
So you call it like a Singapore? I don't know.
Well, you know, you guys come up with these names because you just like the way they sound. They sound funny. Singaporean.
I don't know what you call it.
I don't either, man, to be honest with you. What do you call a native of Singapore?
Probably they have names like a Sangamon or something. They'll shorten it up and everything about that. You know how they do that?
No, I don't know how they do that.
You know, like sometimes they call a... like, don't they call like a...
Will you come on and spit it out, man? I haven't got all night.
Well, like, they'll call somebody from, come from New York to call you a Yankee, right?
Call you a Yankee? Yeah, if you play baseball.
Uh-huh. You got you on that one.
Well, yeah, what would they call a Yankee then?
They call Americans Yankees. I got the word here. Singaporean. I was right. A Singaporean.
You weren't right. We were right.
Yeah, we said it.
Oh, you're right. Anyway, Livingston was detained, but she was later told to get off our flight and never darken our sheets again. So she was in the Playboy, or the Singapore version of Playboy, which described her as not just another pretty face. She's a pretty face with large breasts, too. But, oh, yeah, you're right. A lot of women have those, too. So she's not just another pretty face with large breasts. She's got a big butt. Tiffany boasts the immaculate poise of a mature model wrapped with a bubbly demeanor, the profile said. For a white woman, she's also very clean, said the I'm kidding, it doesn't say that.
Oh, man, you got in trouble for that.
I'm joking, okay? Asked if she believed in destiny, Tiffany said, yes, I do believe in destiny, and I'm destined someday to open up the emergency exit on a flight at 45,000 feet and vaporize. No, she said, I'm the kind of person who needs to feel like everything happens for a reason. When you date a guy and it goes badly, that's horrible. But if you leap out of an airplane, that's even horribler. No, she said, but if you can write a song about it, then it was worth it. So, Tiffany, the next time you jump out of an airplane, write a song about it. Let me ask you a question, man, and because I suppose I've had, you know, yeah, sure, I've had nerves on airplanes. But when I first started flying, I think now I'm good, you know. As a matter of fact, I was on a flight. We were going down to the Caribbean, and this was about 5 or 6 years ago. And I'll tell you, man, we were flying into Orlando, and we were going to take that. We took the kids on the Disney cruise. And this guy, I don't know what happened, but you can often... You know, when you think about it later, because they don't say anything. You know, he just missed somebody. But this cat did a bank and a turn that was not just right out of the books. You know, this was like, it was real fast.
Yeah, like he was trying to avoid something.
Exactly. Like he was trying to avoid hitting something. And I remember the plane went down and turned. Everybody on the flight, everyone in the plane sort of looked up. And beads of sweat started forming, and rosaries came out, and the signs of the cross. I mean, it was. And then the pilot got on the intercom and said, I'm sorry, folks, but my zipper was down. No, he said.
Did he say that?
No, he didn't say that. He didn't come on and explain anything. Jason says that he put pictures of this playmate at twitter.com/Phil Hendry Show, but of course, he's not going to put any in the message box so I can look at them. But if you'd like to go see the playmate that we're talking about, Tiffany Livingston, go to twitter.com/Phil Hendry Show and check it out. And I cannot open that window up. I am told, Jason, the link that you sent me is a corrupt piece of crap. The hell is this, man? All right, so there you go. That is Tiffany Livingston. The other question that I have, and again, why is it that if someone is afraid of flying and someone is deathly afraid of the plane crashing, why do they want to jump out of the airplane?
That's a good question, yeah.
I don't know, but you'd think it'd be logical to get out of there if the plane is going to crash.
No, it's not logical to get out of there if the plane's going to crash if you are 40,000 feet up, man. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, but what do you think would be better, flying through the air on your own or the plane crash?
Bud, I would take my chances with the plane, man. If I leap out of the plane...
Are you crazy, man? You leap out of the plane, you got no chance. First of all, you up with no oxygen. So your head's going to blow up, your lungs are going to blow up, everything like that.
What's he talking about?
When you go up high enough, there's very little oxygen. Did you know that?
Are you crazy or something? There's all kinds of wind and everything.
There may be a lot of wind, man, but there ain't no oxygen, okay? The air may be moving around, but it's very thin up there, so there's not a lot of oxygen. I told the story on the air of the man who rode the storm. You know that one, Jace? And I think I told it on the air here. There was a guy, an Air Force pilot, and he wrote the book called The Man Who Rode the Hurricane or The Man Who Rode the Storm. Do you remember that, Robert?
Yeah, I remember a little bit of it.
What was it?
This is a guy who had to eject from a jet. And he was up there, man. Now, I don't know how high these jets get. He was an Air Force or Navy pilot. He was on some kind of maneuver. He was out and he was flying and he was doing what those guys do, right? So he's flying. And he flew up over a hurricane or some kind of storm. But make a long story short here, the guy experienced a mechanical problem. He had to eject. He ejected at an elevation that could have been fatal. He was up way up there, Jack. I mean, he was way the hell up there to the point where he could feel, as he ejected and flew out of the jet, he could feel his skin beginning to stretch, you know?
Like that lady's boobs did.
Her boobs didn't stretch. You an idiot or something?
Man, why do you keep saying that?
Well, on account of what it said.
I already told you her boobs didn't stretch, man. It had to do with her being afraid of flying. Anyway, so he could feel his skin stretching. He could feel his face. He had a difficult time breathing. But he was surviving this. Now, I'm not telling the story the way he told it. And you've got to get this book. It's called, I think, The Man Who Rode the Storm or The Man Who Rode... Tiffany, no, I'm kidding. The man who...
Really?
No. The Man Who Rode the Storm. Anyway, The Man Who Rode the Thunder. Thank you very much, Jace, by William Rankin. You got to read this. He could not open his chute because he had to get to a certain elevation before he could open the chute. Now, that's the part of the story that's fascinating because he was airborne. He was up there for, I think, and if I'm exaggerating... Please forgive me, but it was minutes, literally minutes went by before he was at a safe elevation where he could open the chute. So he's just flying through the air. And he's flying through the air, at least partially, in the middle of a thunderhead, a thunderstorm. There's clouds, thunderclouds. There is rain. There's lightning. There's all kind of stuff, okay?
Man, I don't know. I'd scare me to death. It would scare me to death.
5 minutes passed before the chute could open. 5 minutes, according to Jason.
What's he doing, reading a book right now?
He's giving me the highlights, okay? Thank you. So 5 minutes, this guy's sailing through the air before his chute could open up. And then he opens his chute, and he continues down. And I think it was an hour or something. How long was it, Jason, before he finally hit the ground? Took him over 10 minutes before he landed. No, it's got to be longer than that. Takes him over 10 minutes before he lands? Really? Well, he was 5 minutes before he could open the chute, then 10 minutes before he lands after the chute. So that's 15 minutes. It seems to me it was a lot longer. But nonetheless, it's a harrowing tale, and it's the tale of a guy that had to bail out of his jet, okay?
What? Did he hit an eject button and all of that, like I seen? Like at an air show, that one guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you hit an eject button and bang, it shoots your ass right out of there, man. If there's one thing that these guys that fly fighter pilots from the very beginning to the end, at least when they finally got parachutes, that any guy that flies, who flies a fighter aircraft knows, and even a bomber, they know that because you have aircraft trouble, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to die. They have parachutes. They are experienced in how to jump, and they know how to eject from an aircraft that's in trouble. Yeah, thanks a lot, Jace. Getting right information. I knew it because I read this thing 20 years ago, and I know I had the information 40 minutes before he was in the air.
Think Jason needs glasses?
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, 40 minutes he was in the air before he landed. So there you go.
So does Tiffany, if she jumped out, it'd be 40 minutes before her, well.
Before what?
Well, how long before her boobs deflate? And
will you shut up with your jokes?
I'm not joking.
How long before her boobs can deflate and then they can, yeah. 877-876-PHIL, the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
So I was telling the guys here, and welcome back, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Today is 9-11, so fly a flag today, man. You know, put the American flag out. Anyway, I was telling the guys during the break, because we were talking about this William Rankin, the guy that rode the Thunder. How we got into that? We got into this topic because Bud thinks that Playboy model's boobs inflated.
No, but you're talking about her going outside.
I'm just wondering why somebody who's afraid of flying, who's deathly afraid of air turbulence and all that accompanies it, would try to open the emergency door and get the hell out of the plane. I mean, what do you think is out there, baby? Nothing but a whole lot of nothing. You step out and you go, boom! But in the book, and the movie, I think, reflects, but in the book, The Right Stuff, written by Tom Wolfe, some of you know who Chuck Yeager is. He's on a lot of those commercials. Hi, I'm Chuck Yeager for Pennzoil or some jazz. You see him, he's a handsome older guy, and I don't know if Chuck Yeager is still with us. Chuck Yeager broke the sound barrier. He was the first, I think, to break the speed of sound, 300 feet per second. 300 feet per second is the speed of sound. Chuck Yeager broke the sound barrier. And growing up in California, as I did, I grew up in the San Gabriel Valley out in Los Angeles. Today, you don't hear them anymore, and I don't think there are kids. He's still alive? Good. I don't think any kids in the L.A. area or Florida or wherever there's an airbase, I don't think kids hear this anymore. But growing up, we got used to listening to sonic booms around here. You would hear just a boom, just a like an explosion that literally sounded like it was punching the side of your house. Heard it all the time because we had Edwards Air Force Base up here. Chuck Yeager was part of that generation of pilots that flew the X-1 and the X-2, the X-15 rocket planes. This was initially going to be our way into space, flying rocket planes, taking off, going into the stratosphere, the ionosphere, and beyond into space. And then came the Ruskies, and they put up the Sputnik, and all of a sudden it was a big, fast, everybody in a hurry to get nowhere fast, and we had to get into space. Yeager, like a lot of pilots his age, thought, I am in line to be an astronaut. I'm in line to go to outer space. It wasn't going to happen. Because when all of a sudden the Ruskies hit the Sputnik and they put a guy up there, we had to do it the Russian way, which was a rocket. The reason why that rocket that you see on the launch pad at Cape Canaveral exists is because we were in a race with the Ruskies. Otherwise, we had the rocket plane program. It might have taken us longer to get to the moon, but in the book, The Right Stuff, Tom Wolfe writes of Chuck Yeager, disappointed that he is not going into space, getting into a prototype of a new rocket plane one morning out here at Edwards Air Force Base, what they used to call Miroc, gets into this plane and takes it straight up. And Wolfe writes so beautifully, Chuck Yeager is going through the stratosphere, he's going through the ionosphere, and suddenly he sees the sky darkening almost to a pitch black, and he can see for just a couple of seconds the twinkling of stars beginning to come out. Chuck Yeager is on the edge of space, and then...
Stalled it.
He stalled it. In the film you see, and he literally says the JC, as he is trying to reignite that engine, can't do it, and that sucker begins to fall away from where Chuck Yeager wanted to be. And, of course, he did eject, and the canopy somehow, I think he was injured as he was ejecting. So there was a great deal of blood and fire, apparently, in the cockpit. And Chuck Yeager is battling this all the way down to Earth, this fire. It was inside of his helmet. That was it. He was trying to get his helmet off. If you see Chuck Yeager today, you'll notice that one of his eyes is a little bit more, looks like it's almost closed. That was an eye that was almost burned to the point where he couldn't see out of it as he had ejected from that rocket plane and was descending back to Earth. But in the film, you see Sam Shepard playing Chuck Yeager walking back toward the base. That's exactly how they found Chuck Yeager. He picked up his helmet, or he picked up what was left of his chute, and he just started hoofing it back to the base. He had just taken, oh, I don't know, a $20 million piece of equipment.
Yeah, I bet that they really loved him.
Yeah, and just destroyed it. So he's a big hero. Anyway, I wasn't supposed to end the story that way. World-famous Phil Hendry Show, thanks to John Werick as our screener tonight, and Charles Wagon, of course, our technical director, and our producer is Jason Rantz. Later and greater, PhilHendryShow.com.
Phil Hendry.